Well, good afternoon. It's 12:12 p.m. on Sunday, February 12th. 12:12 on the 12th. How appropriate in 2012. That's a little bit spooky. I managed to free myself from the clutches of home and family long enough to get a walk in today. Yesterday, I got up really early, was really cranking along on stuff. Nothing that's useful for the conversation, but it was snowing. It was a quiet day. It was snowing. It was like 7 degrees out. And I thought, okay, well, I'll wait for the sun to come up before I go out for my walk. And of course, very shortly thereafter, we got up and family demands. And next thing you know, it was almost 4 p.m. And it's like, I'm not going to go out at 4 o'clock. To begin with, I have to fix supper. Of course, it turned out that fixing supper involved placing an order with Papa John's for them to deliver. So in theory, I could have. It was already getting dark. And did I mention it was 7 degrees? It was not that cold at the end of the day. But by then it was like, yeah, not going to go. 2 days in a row. What a slug I am. And the self-recrimination began at that point. So I gave myself a good stern talking to and thought, I'll go Sunday for sure. And I almost missed it. The thing was that everybody was asleep. I got up around 5 because the cats were raising Cain and wanting their breakfast, and I thought coffee sounded good, and so I got up, settled the cats, and it was quiet because everybody was asleep. I couldn't really do anything. I piddled around on the computer, caught up a bit with my students who took my warning last week, coupled with the grades, to heart and posted a ridiculous amount after I had gone to bed last night. So technically it was Saturday. Yes, I'll get credit for being on time, even though for some of it, not really. And I've told them again and again. I've told them more than once. It's in writing in a file in Blackboard labeled Start Here in the sidebar menu, for those of you who are familiar with Blackboard. The very first item on the left-hand navigation screen is one that says Start Here. And it outlines what each week will be, how I expect it to work, and where I want them to spend their time and how. In general terms, each week the topic changes because each week we discuss a different piece of reading. Each week they have to read a different piece, 4 different books. So they had a week to get set up, and first week, everything seemed to go all right. We had a few people who were still trying to find a foot to stand on. They got it together. Second week seemed to go okay. Third week, things started going. Everybody posted everything on Saturday. It's like, no. You're supposed to do 2 posts a week, one early in the week about the reading, one late in the week about what you think about the reading. So there's a writing prompt that goes with each reading. So last week was Postman and his view on education. That's what I wanted you to write about, wanted them to write about. So I also make it so that they can substitute their own. The only stipulation is that they need to tell me what it is. Sometimes they post something and I'm not real sure what it's supposed to be. If it's at about the right time and it talks about something that's appropriate to the reading, then I'll give them credit for it. I'm not really that fussy. I just want them to stay engaged as time goes on, which is why I have them do two things a week, one early, one late. And they're supposed to read, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they're supposed to read the chapters for the coming week. So I gave them week one to read the first set of chapters for Postman. And so last week, the end of the week, they were supposed to read Hughes. It's apparent that not everybody did. So I've got some posts in there this morning about the chapters, about what I said in my podcast, but not necessarily what's in the reading. And while Postman was infuriating, Hughes amuses me. And I threw that out in a podcast the other day and said, you know, or in a comment, I think, that one of them asked about what it was that I found infuriating about Postman. And with Hughes, Human Built World, his thesis is that all technological advancement on the part of humankind is as a direct result of humans trying to get back to the Garden of Eden. I'm not kidding. This is the book. And so I'm quite amused by this because it pretty much ignores any technological advance that happens in non-Christian nations, that happens with non-Christian peoples, that happens in a tradition that has no Garden of Eden. Now, to be perfectly clear, he is not talking about some analog, some Elysian fields. He's talking literally the Garden of Eden from the Bible. So just starting from that supposition, the book is laughable on its face. I'm really anxious to see what these students will think of it when they start coming to grips with what he's trying to say about the human-built world and the fact that there is no Eastern tradition of technology. There is no alternate view than Christianity. In his defense, he makes an interesting case. But the reality of what he's actually arguing is mind-numbingly stupid. And I'm wondering how many of the people who will be coming off from the e-reader jag and gratefully returning to their paperback books where they can mark them up and ignore them in the corner where they don't have them so they don't really do the reading. Whereas with the ebook, I think a lot of them did the reading because they were reading on their phones and on their iPads. So they didn't have an excuse that the book was at home or in the other bag or left in the car or wherever. It was with them. I had a couple of people complain that they don't like working on the blog, that they like working in Blackboard itself because everything was all together. And I pointed out that everything is still all together if you've built your feed reader correctly. And that everything that you create for the class, everything that they create for the class, will in fact be theirs to take away when the class is over and not locked and stolen from them when Blackboard closes the door on the course. So the truth is that they have absolutely no investment in this course that they want to take away. Otherwise, they would see that as a benefit instead of an obstacle. So yeah, it's a fun class. I'm enjoying this relaxed mode. On the one hand, it doesn't have the same immediacy. It doesn't have the same, we've got to do it today because tomorrow we've got to do something else. Because really, we've got to do it this week, because next week we're going to do something else. And we're going to do that 14, 15 times. I think everybody's actually signed up now for their research topic, which is a bonus. So yeah, the class amuses me, and perhaps I'm learning a few things too. At least that's my hope. If I'm not learning something by teaching the class, then I really am doing it wrong. Even though it's a class that I've taught before. It's interesting to see their different perceptions of poverty and hunger. And one of the examples that Postman gives in the beginning of his book is that people aren't starving in the world because there's too much information. And so he holds that up as an example of how information doesn't help us. And the problem, and I think that it's a really good example, the problem with that is that the information that he's talking about, how to grow food, isn't really helpful. And that's his point, is that it isn't really helpful. But what is helpful, or what might be helpful, is knowing why, even knowing how to grow food, the people can't. It's not that they won't. It's not like, oh, I'm going to choose to starve to death. I think of some of the African nations where hunger is endemic, or India, where hunger is widespread, even in the U.S., where hunger is altogether too common. Caught at that time. Even in the U.S., where the hunger is absolutely too common, why do people go hungry? Well, because they don't have food. Information on how to grow food, information on how to get food, notwithstanding, they're hungry because they have no food. They have no food in large part because they have no money. They have no money in large part because they have no marketable skills. Or the skills that they have are not marketable. That's another one of his points, was that how we use the words actually influences the meaning. Almost everybody has some sort of skills. And the problem is that if the skills they have are not the ones that they need to solve a particular problem, the skill that they really need is to figure out how to get the skills that they need. And for many people, that's where education comes in. And for too many people, that's where education has failed. Because it's taught them that if they don't have somebody holding their hand, if they don't have somebody giving them a grade, then they're not allowed to learn anything. And so finding out how to get food, finding out how to get the skills that they need to get food, finding out how to live while they get the skills that they need to get food, it's an interesting problem. And I see it largely as a technological one, although truthfully, I think it's more political than technological. We have the technical means to make sure that no one in the world goes hungry, and yet we don't use them because we don't want to reward lazy people. I mean, when we think about it, that sort of boils down to, that's what the conservatives are arguing for, saying, Don't take my money away. I earned my money. Don't give my money to taxes because I earned it. The government didn't. And yet, we could, in theory, I believe, I could be wrong, we could feed the world. But we couldn't feed them very much. And we couldn't feed them steak. But I think we could feed them. I mean, all of those, laugh if you will, Sally Fields commercials, where 26 cents a day feeds a hungry child. So why aren't we feeding everyone? Is it because of information? Is it because we have too much information? Is it because we're buried information? This is what Postman would postulate, is that we have so much information we don't know what to do with it, and so therefore people starve, which is on its face a logical progression from the argument that he makes, but laughable. People are not going hungry because they have too much information. People are going hungry because they have no food. They can't get food. The people who have the food, who might be willing to give it to them, aren't where they are. And they can't get to where the food is. It seems pretty straightforward. It seems actually to be pretty much a question of information. We know where there's food, or roughly. We know where there are people who need it. Well, they do. I don't know that I know where there are people who need food. I did know where there was a student who needed food. One of my peers in grad school was a foreign student. He came here from another country and as such had no green card to work. And when the university cut the subsistence allowance but did not cut the rental for student housing, the choice was stay in school and starve, or go back where they came from. Now this was in 97. This is back before the big immigration, we got to get rid of all these damn immigrants, rephrased as we need to get rid of the illegal immigrants. But what they mean is we want to get rid of all the brown people. But this is before all that, and quite frequently, the student would have difficulty walking across campus because of hunger. I found out about it, and a couple times a month, 20 pounds of rice, 10 pounds of potatoes, 10 pounds of carrots, a can of olive oil. Basic things appeared outside the student's door. It's a miracle. But it wasn't because of too much information. It was because too little was in the hands of the people who needed to make the decision. Hello. And so I think it's just one of the things that Postman's diatribe about information and information management fails to take into consideration. And that's that sometimes the problem is not too much information, but too little. And particularly too little in the hands of the people who needed to make decisions. Now, Postman also takes an awful lot of liberties with his arguments, making really what I think of as false or questionable predicates, and then basing logical arguments on those questionable predicates. Sort of like, if people have purple heads, then we need to get sunglasses. We need to get sunglasses so that we can protect our eyes. We need to protect our eyes because people frequently have sharp objects thrust at them. So people with purple heads have sharp objects thrust at them. It's logical. It's a true syllogism. It's an absolutely correct logical chain. It's not actually a syllogism. But the problem is, there's no single step within it that's true, well, or completely true, that is justification for the statement itself. And that's what Postman's Technopoly is all about. So I find it infuriating. What I also find is myself back at the back gate, and tomorrow is another day. With any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.